Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo
bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Narayanam namaskritya. Naram chaiva narotamam. Om devim sarasvatim vyasam. Tato jayam udirayet. Nashta prayeshu apadreshu. Nityam bhagavata sevaya. Bhagavati uttama shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead Narayan, unto Naranarayan Rishi, the supermost human, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. By regular attendance and classes on the Bhagavatam, and by rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. Okay. So today we're moving on to the next shloka from Friday, which is 112. It's one of those famous shlokas. And like Shesha Prabhu said, it's one of those that it could be given class on for, 30 days or more. So I will try to narrow it down to a few important points, hopefully. So it's one of those unusual melodies, so if we could all do it together, or if you could lead it.
Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite Kimva Pararishvara Sadhya Vidya Vandyate Pakriti Bhi Shushu Shubhi Sakshana.
I guess just one more time, since we're short on time. One more time.
Apichita kaita votra paramo yevat saranam satam vedyam vastava matra vastu shivadam tapatrayam mulanam srimadbhagavate mahamuni krite kimva pararishvara sadha vidya varudate prakriti di shushu shubhi sakshana.
Let's read the synonyms all together, since we have quite a lot to cover, so just kind of go through as fast as we can. So the synonyms all together: dharma, religiosity. Prochidhita, completely rejected. Kaitava, covered by fruitive intention. Atra, herein. Parama, the highest. Nirmatsaranam, of the 100% pure in heart. Satam, devotees. Vedyam, understandable. Vastavam, factual. Atra, herein. Vastu, substance. Shivadam, well-being. Tapatraya, threefold miseries. Unmulanam, causing uprooting of. Srimat, beautiful. Bhagavate, the Bhagavad Purana. Mahamuni, the great sage Vyasadeva. Krite, having compiled, Kim, what is, Va, the need, Pare, others, Ishvara, the Supreme Lord, Sadhya, at once, Hridi, within the heart, Avarutyate, becomes compact, Atra, herein, Kritibi, by the pious men, Shushru Shubi, by culture, Takshanat, without delay. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavata Purana propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. This beautiful Bhagavatam, compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva in his maturity, is sufficient in itself for God realization. What is the need of any other scripture? As soon as one attentively and submissively hears the message of Bhagavatam, by this culture of knowledge, the Supreme Lord is established within the heart. Purport. So Sri Gaurangi has very astutely broken up these beginning purports, which are very long and very nectarian. So she has very wisely broken them up into a few different classes. So today we'll do one first half of the purport, and the rest you'll get tomorrow. So, you know, has a lot of amazing and beautiful points. Purport. Religion includes four primary subjects, namely pious activities, economic development, satisfaction of the senses, and finally, liberation from material bondage. Irreligious life is a barbarous condition. Indeed, human life begins when religion begins. I'll just say that again. Indeed, human life begins when religion begins. Eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating are the four principles of animal life. These are common both to animals and to human beings, but religion is the extra function of the human being. Without religion, human life is no better than animal life. Therefore, in human societies, there is some form of religion which aims at self-realization and which makes reference to man's eternal relationship with God. In the lower stages of human civilization, there is always competition to lord it over the material nature, or in other words, there is continuous rivalry to satisfy the senses. Driven by such consciousness, man turns to religion. He thus performs pious activities or religious functions in order to gain something material. But if such material gains are obtainable in other ways, then so-called religion is neglected. This is the situation in modern civilization. Man is thriving economically, so at present he is not very interested in religion. Churches, mosques, or temples are now practically vacant. Men are more interested in factories, shops, and cinemas than in religious places, which were erected by their forefathers. This practically proves that religion is performed for some economic gains. Economic gains are needed for sense gratification. Often when one is baffled in the pursuit of sense gratification, he takes to salvation and tries to become one with the Supreme Lord. Consequently, all these states are simply different types of sense gratification. In the Vedas, the above-mentioned four activities are prescribed in the regulative way so that there will not be any undue competition for sense gratification. But Srimad Bhagavatam is transcendental to all these sense gratificatory activities. It is purely transcendental literature which can be understood only by the pure devotees of the Lord, who are transcendental to competitive sense gratification. In the material world, there is keen competition between animal and animal, man and man, community and community, nation and nation. But the devotees of the Lord rise above such competitions. They do not compete with the materialist because they are on the path back to Godhead, where life is eternal and blissful. Such transcendentalists are non-envious and pure in heart. In the material world, everyone is envious of everyone else, and therefore there is competition. But the transcendental devotees of the Lord are not only free from material envy, but are well-wishers to everyone, and they strive to establish a competitionless society with God in the center. The contemporary socialist conception of a competitionless society is artificial, because in a socialist state, there is competition for the post of dictator. From the point of view of the Vedas, or from the point of view of common human activities, sense gratification is the basis of material life. There are three paths mentioned in the Vedas. One involves fruitive activities to gain promotion to better planets. Another involves worshiping different demigods for promotion to the planets of the demigods. And another involves realizing the absolute truth and his impersonal feature and becoming one with him. The impersonal aspect of the absolute truth is not the highest. Above the impersonal feature is the Paramatma feature, and above this is the personal feature of the absolute truth, or Bhagavan. Srimad Bhagavatam gives information about the absolute truth in his personal feature. It is higher than impersonalist literatures and higher than the Jnanakanda division of the Vedas. It is even higher than the Karmakanda division and even higher than the Upasanakanda division, because it recommends the worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. In the Karmakanda, there is competition to reach heavenly planets for better sense gratification, and there is similar competition in the Jnanakanda and the Upasanakanda. The Srimad Bhagavatam is superior to all these because it aims at the supreme truth, which is the substance or the root of all categories. I'll just say that again because it's so ecstatic. The Srimad Bhagavatam is superior to all of these because it aims at the supreme truth, which is the substance of or the root of all categories. From Srimad Bhagavatam, one can come to know the substance as well as the categories. The substance is the absolute truth, the Supreme Lord, and all emanations are relative forms of energy. Magyanatimirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshu amalitamyena tasmai shri gurave namaha ancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sandhivya eva cha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. I seek the blessings of the Vaishnavas. I hope to be able to say something useful today that can bring us just a little bit closer to Krishna for today. So how to speak about just, you know, a few things from the shloka when there's so many things to speak about. So I thought one interesting common denominator that would encapsulate the shloka nicely is the point about the Bhagavatam being understandable by those who are pure in heart. And then we can get all the benefits that the purport talks about. If we achieve some sort of purity, which would attract us to hearing the message of the Bhagavatam. So it seemed to me like this need for purity was underlying this whole shloka. So I wanted to go into that a little bit, hopefully, and we can try to understand that concept a little bit deeper. So obviously, devotional service is purifying, and obviously in our current age of Kali, the prime method is the chanting of the holy names. So obviously, you know, these things are purifying. So everything that I say is going to encompass that. But also, it says in the Bhagavatam that in order to come to chant the holy name, in the first place, one has to have some degree of purity. So it's kind of like, you know, which comes first, like the purity or the chanting? So I wanted to delve a little bit into that. And of course, also, we are currently in the age of Lord Chaitanya, you know, which is a very rare age and a very rare Kali Yuga. He only comes once in the day of Brahma, which is, you know, once in, you know, how many Kali Yugas? Is it 1,000 Kali Yugas times 71 times 1,000? So anyway, 4.3 billion years. So we're in a very unique and special Kali Yuga. So we do have the sort of special access to the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. So that is also there, you know, in terms of becoming purified. We're in the special Kali Yuga, and you know, he comes to not kill the demons like Krishna, but he comes to even deliver the demons. So there's extra mercy in this Kali Yuga, extra opportunity for purification. So I wanted to keep that in mind as we're delving into the subject of purification. So what I'm saying is not different from chanting or from the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. So in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says that the human life is meant for purifying one's existence. So this very human birth is given to us for purification. And if we don't undergo this purification, then it's kind of a waste of a precious human life. And what does this purification mean? In the 16th chapter of the Gita, Prabhupada says that purification means to follow the regulations that are laid down by the Vedas. So following Vedic principles means to purify oneself. And it's only through that purification that one can achieve real happiness and transcendence. He cannot achieve it by means of sense gratification, which is what most people out there are. That's the program, you know. I'm trying to satisfy the senses to become happy because they don't have any other information. So that's their program, but as we know from our scriptures, it's quite futile. It doesn't lead to anything except, you know, repeated birth and the possibility of going to hell. So this, only that. So this purification is sort of important to make our human life meaningful. So in that same chapter, Prabhupada says that the more a person is freed from lust, anger, and greed, which are the three enemies, the more his existence becomes pure. So even that is like a tall order, to become free from lust, anger, and greed, right? Then he can follow the rules and regulations enjoined in the Vedic literatures. And by following the regular principles of human life, one gradually raises himself to the platform of spiritual realization. So that's our program. So in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavatam, and I'm sure you've heard it said before, in order to get to Shuddha Sattva, or the transcendental stage beyond the modes, or the vasudeva state, one has to go through sattva gun, the mode of goodness. So we go through sattva gun to get to Shuddha Sattva. So what does it mean? What does it mean to come to the mode of goodness, which in itself is not so easy? Like, it takes some endeavor, and perhaps being even born with some sattva gun qualities in order to be able to perform, like to be situated in Satragun easily or nicely. Now, according to Vedic rites, activities in the mode of goodness are considered auspicious for progress on the path of liberation, or Daivi Prakriti. Whereas on the other hand, the modes of passion and ignorance, there is no possibility of liberation. Either way, in either passion or ignorance, they will have to remain in this material world as human beings, or they will descend among the species of animals or even lower life forms. So what happens when a jiva falls like further and further into lower and lower life forms? Can anybody say like what happens to him?
Soul, they misuse the free will and they go down, 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 down. They go to the bottom, rock bottom, to say, I am tired and enough. Can somebody help if there is God?
Thank you.
Just for that purpose.
Yes. That makes total sense. It's like, okay, you don't want the opportunity, you get downgraded and downgraded and downgraded, and eventually... Yes, thank you, that was so nice. That enough, like, please help me to raise myself up. This isn't making me happy. In a lecture that we heard recently, Srila Prabhupada lecture, it was given by Karnapur Prabhu, Prabhupada talks about the three modes. And he likens sattva-gun to light of knowledge, and rajagun and tamagun to darkness. Rajagun constitutes mostly of lobha and kama, greed and lust, which most of the population is on that program. And then tamagun are just the eyes are closed. So how to cultivate the sattva gun? Well, the first practical things that comes to my mind is about rising early, you know, for the Brahma Muhurta, cleanliness, and then chanting your rounds at the Brahma Muhurta. And if one can do that on a daily basis, I would say he's pretty well on his way to be in sattva gun for the rest of the day. Isn't it so? And if you don't do that, it's almost like impossible. It's almost like the modes try to take you... It's very easy for the modes to take you over if you don't take that opportunity in the morning. In the 16th chapter of the Gita, Krishna outlines qualities which are to be cultivated in order to become situated in sattva gun, and then also, you know, from sattva gun we go to shuddha sattva, to the transcendental platform, or daivi prakriti. If these qualities are developed by practice by all classes of men, then gradually it is possible to rise to the highest platform of transcendental realization. Well, these qualities are fearlessness, purification of one's existence, cultivation of spiritual knowledge, charity, self-control, performance of sacrifice, study of the Vedas, austerity, simplicity, non-violence, truthfulness, freedom from anger, renunciation, tranquility, aversion to fault-finding, compassion for all living entities, freedom from covetousness, gentleness, modesty, steady determination, vigor, forgiveness, fortitude, cleanliness, freedom from envy and from the passion for honor. So, tall order, huh? So if we can try to cultivate these qualities, you know, also to always keep them in mind, and, you know, throughout the day, as the modes try to attack us, you know, we try to remember these qualities and try to choose our reaction to the world, to the modes. We can also cultivate sattva gun in those ways. So what is the opposite of trying to purify oneself? The opposite is to just gratify the senses, right? And in the 16th chapter of the Gita, you know, Krishna says that these are qualities of the demoniac, which is basically, the program is to try to gratify the senses, and this is the prime necessity for human civilization. The demonia conclude that the world is a phantasmagoria. There is no cause and effect, no controller, no purpose, and everything is unreal. They say that this cosmic manifestation arises due to chance, material actions and reactions. They do not think that the world was created by God for a certain purpose. Isn't it? This is the program of most people out there. It's like, I'm just here to enjoy the senses, to have like a nice, comfortable life, and this is my successful life. You know, this is the mindset of most people out there, Kali Yuga. Following such conclusions, the demoniac, who are lost to themselves and who have no intelligence, engage in unbeneficial, horrible works meant to destroy the world. They try to enjoy this material world to the utmost limit, and therefore always engage in inventing something for sense gratification. So in that 16th chapter of the Gita, Krishna divides the people into two basic classes, the divine and the demoniac. And the divine are the ones who are trying for purification, they're trying to attain that state of They're trying for liberation. And the demoniac are basically those who do not. So basically the only criterion, Krishna says, is between divine and demoniac is obedience to the scriptures. That's the only criterion. In that chapter, it says that both the demigods and the demons are born of Prajapati, but the only difference is that one class obeys the Vedic injunctions and the other does not. So that's the only distinguishing factor between whether we want to follow a Daivi Prakriti, the path of transcendence liberation, or whether we want, you know, the other program, which doesn't lead to anything useful. In that same chapter, Krishna goes on to say that one is born with certain qualities which help him to go to take that higher path, the path of Daivi Prakriti. And one is also born with lower demoniac qualities which make it difficult to follow that path. And, you know, that person just wants to more just and try to enjoy the senses. So it starts from birth, it starts from the womb. And obviously from previous lives, you don't just come out and you're like, you're a, you know, a fresh slate. You have all your samskaras from your previous lives. So it starts before birth, and Krishna assures Arjuna, yes, Arjuna, don't worry, you were born with mostly divine qualities. So in the sixth chapter of the Gita, so how does this happen? How does one get born with divine qualities which help him to pursue, you know, transcendence? In the sixth chapter, it says that the unsuccessful yogi, after many, many years of enjoyment on the planets of the pious living entities, is born into a family of righteous people or into a family of rich aristocracy, so the Srimad or Shuchi. And if unsuccessful after a long practice of yoga, he takes birth in a family of transcendentalists who are surely great in wisdom. Certainly, such a birth is rare in this world. Birth in a family of yogis or transcendentalists is praised because the child is born in such a family wherein he receives a spiritual impetus from the very beginning of his life. In that purport, Prabhupada talks about his own childhood and his own birth, and then also that of his guru, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and how fortunate of a birth, you know, did they receive. Prabhupada was born into a very pious Vaishnava family in Bengal, you know, and his father was an extremely pious Vaishnava who gave him little Radha Krishna deities to worship when he was like very little. You know, and then his father built him a Rath cart also when he was very little, and Prabhupada had processions with his little friends. You know, they had like a little mini Rathayatra. So this was his, you know, very fortunate birth, he says in that purport. And then, of course, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was born of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I mean, I don't think it gets any more auspicious than that. I wanted to just pause here a moment before we go on, and if we wanted to examine our own lives and, you know, see what aspect of our lives, how did we get that spiritual impetus from the beginning of our lives? You know, because we that are here, we must have done this in prior lives, and we must have had some Srimad or Shuchi or transcendentalist, you know, aspects of our childhood. So I wanted to just pause here and see if we can, maybe for like a few minutes, because there's more to cover, you know, think about our own Srimad or Shuchi birth or family of transcendentalists, if anybody would just like to share for a few minutes. And sometimes it's also not obvious. Sometimes it's not like, oh, like my whole family's pious and, you know, I was just like worshiping God from my very birth. Sometimes there's just like some element of our life that gave us that piety or that impetus for spiritual life. You know, we might have had like demoniac parents, but our aunt was pious or something. No, so I wanted to, if we could examine our own life and see what was Srimad or Shuchi about my own life. Does somebody want to share? Yes.
So I used to hear about Krishna from a very small stories of Krishna.
Our homes, I don't have a
field. So
there's so much pictures of Krishna.
Yes.
You know, and it's amazing. You wonder,
what's happened as you're growing up, you hear the
stories of Krishna.
Yes, so that was your Shuchi birth.
Yeah, you know, so it's like something natural.
Right, right. Thank you.
It's a good time, I guess, it, you know, as you become more, as you associate with the outside world, and sometimes it's, you know, you start to lose a little bit.
Yeah, sometimes maybe in your adolescence or early youth, you go in like another direction, but I think at some point then you get pulled back. And that early piety from your life is sort of like always there, you know, and it sort of pulls you back. And I think that's that benefit of being born in a pious family, is that that piety, like, it's sort of like a pillar in your consciousness, and you sort of can always come back to that, isn't it? So even if you go, of course, in your youth or whatever, you come back to that because it's just so ingrained in you. And I think, you know, that's that impetus, that spiritual impetus, and that auspicious birth. Yes, anyone else?
I was just going to say that you kind of, there's two things that seems to be involved, like, you know, Yesham, Twantikatam, Papam, that those who have accumulated pious activities in previous lives and in this life, you know, they give up the dualities and be able to engage in devotional service. But also, Prabhupada, when he was with his disciples, sometimes he would say, you know, you're all with me in a previous life. But other times, when the devotees would ask him, oh, Prabhupada, you know, does that mean that we have performed so many pious activities? And he said, I have created your pious activities.
Yes.
And I was thinking about Murghari also. You know, here's someone who didn't have good qualities, that he loved seeing animals suffer, but because of the mercy of Narada Muni, the mercy of the Guru, he was able to develop good qualities. That was another point, that just by becoming a devotee and by chanting, we don't even have to concentrate on developing. It'll automatically happen, you know, those qualities will automatically come.
Definitely, it's two things. It's like the impetus from a prior life, and then it's also the, well, like I mentioned in the beginning, it's the causeless mercy of Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada, which is just causeless. You know, somebody could be a demon. You know, we just heard recently in the Chaitanya Charitamrita how Lord Chaitanya stayed in the house of, was it Govindadasa?
Madhavadasa,
and he delivered many, you know, sinful living entities. So, yes, as I mentioned earlier, like in Kali Yuga, we do have that even extra step up. We're having the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, you know. And, you know, Prabhupada, I was thinking how amazing was it, Prabhupada, like, from Bengal, India, ended up in the center of the hippie revolution, like in San Francisco, in the Haight, you know, like, what is that? You know, like, that's Krishna. You know, he ended up in the center of the hippie revolution and just like delivering all those, you know, young hippies who, that hippie lifestyle was very simple, you know, and, you know, he just was there to help to deliver them. So this is Lord Chaitanya's mercy in our age. You know, and then he had his own, like, mantra rock concert at the Haight, in the Haight, like, you know, like, this is Bhaktisiddhanta's plan, like Prabhupada said, you know, just send Prabhupada to the most like sinful place in the West, and, you know, give them the mercy. Anyone else want to share their Srimad or Shuchi story? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I just wanted to share. Is it on? I can't tell. I'm supposed to. Extremely wonderful, pious father who really walked the talk as a Christian. And my greatest memory of my father is in bed at night where everybody else is in the den with the TV.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. kiss him goodnight. And I also wanted to say his birthday was on Radhastami this year. So it was like a special point.
Thank you for sharing that. Yes, that is your own own little, you know, Shuchi birth. Okay, we'll just take one more and then we'll continue because I have a couple more points to cover. Yes, of course you got a pious birth. Like, of course, many people here, of course.
Not really. Well, I would like to thank Srila Prabhupada, my spiritual master, and the devotees to revive our real love for Krishna.
Yes, thank you. And the Bhagavatam says that the moment of our birth is no coincidence. Oh, did you have something else to say? So it's no coincidence the moment of our birth is an arrangement by a higher will. So this birth chart that we receive at the moment of our birth, that's an arrangement from Krishna. It's not a coincidence. In the Bhagavatam, it says the suitable arrangement of astral influences is never a creation of man's will, but is the arrangement of the superior management of the agency of the Supreme Lord. Of course, the arrangement is made according to the good or bad deeds of the living beings. And an example is given, this is in the first canto, 12th chapter of Maharaj Parikshit. Maharaj Parikshit was not only a great Kshatriya emperor, but also a great devotee of the Lord. Thus, he cannot take his birth at any inauspicious moment. As a proper place and time is selected to receive a respectable personage, so also to receive such a personality as Maharaj Parikshit, who was especially cared for by the Supreme Lord. A suitable moment is chosen when all good stars assemble together to exert their influence upon the king. Thus he took his birth just to be known as the great hero of the Srimad Bhagavatam. In the sixth chapter of the Gita, it says, on taking such a birth, he revives his divine consciousness of his previous life, and he again tries to make further progress in order to achieve complete success, O son of Kuru. By virtue of the divine consciousness of his previous life, he automatically becomes attracted to the yogic principles, even without seeking them. So, and I was just thinking, so many stories of the senior devotees in this community who I've spoken to personally, you know, who were like engaged in that hippie lifestyle, but then like when they met Srila Prabhupada, they just gave all that up like in one day, you know, in one day they gave up all their bad habits and they just became like very pious. So surely this is some, either Prabhupada creating their karma, like we said, or some impetus from a prior life. It says he automatically becomes attracted to the yoga principles even without seeking them. And I'll just finish with this quote from the Bhagavatam. I have to see where it's from. Unless therefore one is purified, one cannot take to the principles of Krishna consciousness or become engaged in chanting the holy names of the Lord, Hare Krishna. So I'll stop here, and I thought we could have a discussion about that, you know, like, which comes first, like the purification, and then you take up devotional service, or devotional service, and then purification, you know, like, maybe I could hear some of your inputs about the relationship between those two things. Yes, so there's like agyata sukriti, like even unknown devotional service, and somehow they...
It is a service, but it's for everyone. That's where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu updated for the public.
Yes, that's that causeless mercy of Lord Chaitanya, to give people some purification or so they can chant Hare Krishna, right? Well, not so that he just liberated them, but, you know... Prabhupada came to create the good karma for the demoniac living entities, for the general populace who was engaged And sense gratification, who was just on the way to hell, so Prabhupada came to give us that mercy, and Lord Chaitanya came to give us that mercy. Anyone else?
I meant on what you influences. It's completely amazing to think that how everything is so arranged for every soul.
Yes.
Everywhere. It's nothing is random, you said.
No, nothing is random.
And how far we are from the ordinary materialists in this world who think everything is random and have it's just chance. It's amazing we can even communicate or relate to them. We have such different understanding of a very central thing, our birth.
And yes.
Where we're placed in life.
Thank you, Shesha Prabhu. Yeah, it is amazing that just totally different conceptions of life and totally different goals in life. How can we even communicate with them? We don't. We just try to give them our association, I guess.
Yeah, I was thinking of what Srila Prabhupada said of Adau Shraddha, like initial faith is there. So then, you know, you also talked about the chanting is a medicine, so you don't wait until you get cured before you take the medicine. You take the medicine first and then you get purified. So then at that point it starts become like a interreaction, because from the chanting get purification, from the purification you get the opportunity to chant more, and it goes on.
Yes,
and
thank you.
And also I was thinking, like, you know, you might talk about all these, you know, your different births of auspiciousness. I also remember in my own case, and my father was, like, you know, very strict, but I wasn't able to put that into perspective until I met the devotees. So then all the pieces of the puzzle starts coming together. So then that's the other thing of Lava Matra, this just moment's association with the devotees. Mm. Then everything comes into perspective. It puts the package together. So there are several things that creates our situation.
Thank you. That's really nice. Really nice point. Thank you.
So, talking about modes of material nature, different modes, my question is, we hear in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says they were born with certain modes, yeah? And he said, Arjun, you have certain modes, and you're going to helplessly, so to speak, be in that. My question is, is it possible to come on higher modes, or is it more that, or is it easier to transcend them, or both can be done? Some comment on that?
Well, my level of realization, it is our philosophy in our scriptures that to go to Shuddhasattva, or the transcendence of the modes, the Vasudeva state, we have to go through Sattva Gun. Now, can we skip over Sattva Gun and go right to transcendence? Like, is that kind of your question? I don't know. I suppose the holy name, you know, does have that power, or the causeless mercy of Lord Chaitanya or Prabhupada, like, you know, they can deliver demons. So, you know, there's that. There's, like, the causeless mercy. Well, in terms of skipping over, like, Sattva Gun and going, you know, I'm in Rajagun and now I'm gonna, like, go for the transcendental state. I don't know, can you comment on that?
Bhagavad Gita in front of you? Can you read 18 or 16?
Oh, very nice. Thank you. Wait, can you just wait for the mic? Is it in the purport?
Yeah, is it the verse Svabhava Yena?
Svabhava Yena Kaunteya, yeah.
Yeah, in the purport.
Okay.
Or you can read the translation.
Okay, I'll read the translation. So this is 1860, Bhagavad Gita. Under illusion, you are now declining to act according to my direction. But compelled by the work born of your own nature, you will act all the same, O son of Kunti. Purport, if one refuses to act under the direction of the Supreme Lord, then he is compelled to act by the modes in which he is situated. Everyone is under the spell of a particular combination of the modes of nature and is acting in that way, but anyone who voluntarily engages himself under the direction of the Supreme Lord becomes glorious.
We have that contamination, but we still have a choice. The modes cannot force me to act if I don't want to. Modes can influence, but I still have a free will to do it for Krishna or why?
You know, that wasn't the question. Because my question is, yes, we can transcend it. My question is, can we go, like in this verse, saying that you're born of certain modes, you're helplessly going to act that way. So you might as well surrender to me and use those modes, so to speak.
Correct.
Yeah. So my question is, does a living entity, can a living entity, if he's in the mode of, let's say, ignorance, can he, let's put Krishna aside first, can he go from mode of ignorance to passion and to goodness?
Oh, I think he definitely, yes, by association with higher modes, he can come into higher modes. He associates with those modes.
Yeah,
regarding the hunter, and we can even see it in our own movement. You know, some of those early devotees that came to Prabhupada, they were like, definitely like in the mode of ignorant, you know, definitely in tamagun, like, you know, and by associating with Prabhupada and Sattva Gun and Shuddha Sattva, they came to those higher modes. So yes, we can associate with those higher modes, and even like those 26 qualities that I mentioned that put one into Sattva Gun and bring one to Shuddha Sattva. Prabhupada was saying, or Krishna or Prabhupada, I forget, it was the purport or the shloka, it was saying that by associating with these qualities or by cultivating these qualities, you know, one one comes to that position. I mean, that's the big question. Like, okay, but then do you need a certain level of purity to come to that position, right? If my natural modes are like Rajagun and Tamagun, how am I going to want to associate with that? You know, if I have some Sattvagun already naturally in me, I naturally like want to associate with those qualities. So yeah, I mean, I think that's a question. So if anybody had any ideas on that.
I was going to say that
by chanting, it's the greatest activity. It's the
most powerful activity. There's nothing more important than that. It gives greater benefits.
So as you chant, you're creating all these highest activities.
And then you can rise above it all. You know, we've seen it with ourselves. We've seen it with so many devotees. So
it may be easier initially for someone to take to the process.
But also, Prabhupada warned us against the dangers of becoming too attached even to the mode of goodness. Mm. And just, you know, having kind of a nice life, an easy life, but not really surrendering. So the chanting process, especially as we do it regularly, it qualifies us, you know, to reach those higher modes.
I agree with that, but I also want to reiterate the statement which I read from the Bhagavatam. Unless, therefore, one is purified, one cannot take to the principles of Krishna consciousness or become engaged in chanting the holy name of the Lord, Hare Krishna. So it's sort of like a catch-22 in my mind. It's like, which comes first, like the chanting, or unless one is purified, one cannot take to the principles of Krishna consciousness. Both, right? It's so unique to each person. Like,
can I give one reason of pure goodness so we can have a clear light?
Please.
Because it is already within us. I mean, most of the devotees, I'm sure, they are experiencing this. Kamakesha Maharaj.
Wait. Hold on a second.
In 1989, I was traveling with Kamal Krishna Maharaj and Bhakti Chara Maharaj in Europe before I came to America. So for a few months, we were going different temples. And one time, I remember, we were sitting in a car and Kamal Krishna Maharaj in the back, I'm in the front. So conversation is going on with four of us. And Kamal Krishna Maharaj says that this is the conclusion, what I understood from Prabhupada, that when you join to Krishna consciousness, you are following the sadhana every day, Mangalarti, chanting 16 ounce minimum, and then honoring prasadam. At one point, you're hearing Bhagavatam, but at one point, you feel that you cannot live without hearing Krishna. You want to hear more, you want to hear more, you want to really chant more, you want to sit down and chant more. He said, Prabhupada said, this is the connection of Shuddha Shakti.
Thank you.
This is like a practical. So yeah. When we do feel sometimes, we should be honest. If we can come to that point
that actually I don't want anything else, but I want to serve Krishna, just hear Krishna and serve Him. That time it's connected
with pure goodness.
That's really nice. Thank you. But yes, it takes some endeavor on our part to practice every day. And I mean, to me, it's if you're practicing, that's you're in sattva gun to be able to practice every day, right? And then that's the connection with Shuddha Sattva, as Pran Govinda Prabhu said, is like when you really get to that stage of purification where you just really can't live without your sadhana or hearing Bhagavatam. So that was very nice. Thank you.
I just wanted to share some points I heard from Prahladanandana's Swami's class just on this topic, and I thought they're like good points that can maybe clarify. One devotee asked him this question, that do we preach to people to cultivate mode of goodness separately from Krishna consciousness? And he said, no. The mode of goodness is part of our Krishna consciousness process. If we follow it the way to us, like you said, we rise early, we whatever, attend the morning program, chant the holy names.
Then we automatically in sattva gun.
Clean. Like he said, he made a point, you know, when you teach people to, you know, worship the deities, you tell them to wash their hands, you know, to shower. So sattva gun is part of Krishna consciousness.
Right.
And another thing he said was that sattva guna is like if you cook for a king. I thought it was a good example. Prabhupada gave off an example. It's like the airport. You have to go to the airport to take the plane. So this is for us like the airport for Shuddha Sattva, which is our goal. But he also gave an example that if you cook for the king, you serve him on a plate. So you can't say, my dear king, I served for you, I cooked for you, you know, reach your hands out and I put it. He said, no. So he said, you have to serve it on a plate. So that plate, sattva guna, is a plate in which we can offer our service to Krishna. But he also mentioned that just like all the modes of nature have bind us to this material world, so we have to be very careful not to be attached to the sattva guna or to stay in it, because sattva guna has also its pitfalls. And he said it's pride. We think, oh, I'm so detached, you know, I'm so pure, I'm this and that. Look at these other people. And will look down at people, or there can be a sense of complacency. So that's another thing we have to look out for, that like, are we actually transcending? Are we really applying ourselves to the process of Krishna consciousness, or are we staying in the sattva gun? So
yeah, for us, when I say sattva gun, for us it just means engaging in devotional service, basically. So it's not like, okay, I mean, just going to cultivate sattva gun and then eventually I'll come to chant. No, it's like the two work together, you know, the rising early, the chanting. Like, you're already in sattva gun, so it's not, I'm not saying anything like sort of different than our process. Yes.
Taking it off the high philosophical platform into the chemical laboratory. And as we know, one of our predecessor spiritual masters is a chemist. In chemistry, the term sublime, and we misinterpret it. We think that means blissful or something. Actually, in chemistry, the word sublime means something, substance is transformed from a gaseous state to solid, or solid state to gaseous state, without having to go through liquidity. That means immediate transformation. And you may remember that Srila Prabhupada states that this chanting is a sublime method for reviving our Krishna consciousness. In other words, it appears to be dead, but it's revived, made alive again. And it's a sublime method, so wherever you are, wherever anyone is, the process will revive.
Yes, the process, but with the process come certain things as well, like, for example, cultivating qualities. So all those things are just like a part of our process, basically. Anyone else? Yes, Mataji.
Also, we can say that the initial circumstance of our life, we were born into a certain situation. In a way, we can say it's an external thing, and we don't really know what's the underlying state. Because when we're talking about piety and impiety, these are in a dormant state in some ways. So the symptoms of suci or, a Brahminical culture or another aspect of it, is just, it doesn't have to show up initially as a condition for developing, for transformation. Because transformation has nothing really to do with where we started. In other words, all the points were mentioned here about instant transformation are relevant to that. So in other words, it's not just how we start. The transformation can be evoked or erupted from another level that's not manifest and it's not visible from the beginning of one's life.
Yes, it says in the Gita, it just gives one an impetus, a spiritual impetus, the beginning of life, but obviously it's not just totally dependent on that, it's just an impetus.
Yeah, it's not ordinary course of activity, it's something that's beyond that, and people are born into demoniac families, and they somehow other something arranged later on.
Well, even the birth in a demoniac family is arranged, and even if they are born in a demoniac family, they themselves have some, you know, pious credits to be able to engage in devotional service. So
exactly.
It doesn't make them demoniac themselves. They're born in a demoniac family. And in fact, Prabhupada says that he arranges for a devotee to be born in all different types of families to show the devotees come from all types of families and all levels. So, but even if he is born in a demoniac family, he himself has some piety within him from his credits. So.
Yeah, unmanifest. And like, people can be born vice versa. You know, they can be born in a pious family and there's something else showing up later on that's not pious.
So. Yes, and people also have a choice. There's also an element of choice. Like, even if I have so many pious credits and I was born a pious family, I can also make choices because I have free will.
Yeah.
So I can choose to associate with something that isn't going to, you know, bring me to Daivi Prakriti. So there's also an element of choice. So there's a lot of things going on.
Yeah. But also, it's not just a question of choice. Some other result of some impious activity from past life can come, you know, at a certain point in
yes,
life.
It's mixed.
And it's
mixed.
It's not even under one's control, almost, you can say.
It's mixed, right. We don't get a purely... You know, there's some suffering and there's some facility, so it's a mix of things, right?
Mm-hmm. Jamil's case also shows that he was in a Brahmin, you know, he was
yes,
in
that's a good example.
Lifestyle, something just by bad association with the prostitute, this whole thing.
That's a good example, yeah, and it's said in the scriptures, because of something from his prior life, he was attracted to the prostitute, but yes, he was born in a nice Brahmin family, so it's a mix of things, mm-hmm. Yes.
What Bhagavatam, that beautifully you are explaining, that sloka, dharma prajita kaitavatra, this gives a light that throughout the Bhagavatam, what conception we have about the race or nature or pre-qualification, but Bhagavatam promotes whoever has more love for God, whether it's a demon or devotee or pious or impious, it doesn't matter, that's what. And a good example, Boli Maharaj, he's from a demon family, and Narad Muni, when he saw that he was arrested by the Lord because he could not give his third step, of course he himself gave, but he was crying. So Narad Muni asked, why are you crying? Because you lost the kingdom, heaven? He said, no, I'm crying because I am low birth, I'm very low, fallen, I'm demon, every way I'm low. But Indra had an opportunity when Lord came to his door and asked, can I do any service for you, my dear brother? Because they're brother, the Bamandev. Mm-hmm. So Indra, instead of asking for love for him or bhakti for him, he asked, oh, can I get the kingdom back so I can enjoy my sense gratification? I'm so sad, I'm just crying. Such an opportunity had. So who is higher, demon or demigod?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So Bhagavatam thank is you. So sweet. Bhagavatam promoting the demon. It's not a demon or demigod or devotee. Question is, whoever understood the essence, the bhakti, he is glorified.
Thank you. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Grantarajshrimad Bhagavatam ki jai.